Okay, welcome back. And just out of curiosity, how many people are here from the intro class? I see a few. Great, welcome. Nice to see people coming in from that. All right, Justin, great. All right, so talking about grief, working with grief. So being, grief is just part of this human condition, right? If we care about people and love people, we will experience grief when they pass. And learning to work with grief well is actually a profound practice in cultivating compassion, or not compassion, well, compassion certainly, but also wisdom. So the parami for this month is wisdom. So just to connect that dot, to kind of bring that into that fold. Now, one of the ways that we can misuse our practice is around grief. By judging ourselves if we feel grief, like, okay, I should be over this by now. I shouldn't be feeling the same quality of sadness. If somehow, if I was more enlightened, if my practice, if I was more spiritual, I wouldn't feel the pain of this loss. Anyone ever have that thought that, okay, I should be over this already? Somehow, if this is really a misinterpretation of equanimity, that we think, okay, if I'm really completely balanced, got my stuff together, I won't be feeling this pain. Somehow we see this attachment and clinging as a sign of our weakness instead of actually a sign that we love someone, that we care for someone. And in some ways, this is a form of spiritual bypassing that we're trying to now feel this very humanness. As I used to really listen to a lot of Simon and Garfunkel when I was a teenager, on that line from the Song of Silence, "I have my books and my poetry to protect me. I'm shielded in my armor, hiding in my room, safe within my womb. I touch no one, and no one touches me. I am a rock, I am an island, and an island feels no pain, and an island never cries." So sometimes we can misinterpret the teachings to think that we should somehow be this island, this sense of being distant from these emotions of sadness, of grief. Instead, I want to encourage all of us to use grief actually as a beautiful way to integrate our practice into this landscape of our lives, to integrate into the fabric of human existence. This very real and universal experience of grief. And so tonight I want to talk about how and explore how to work with grief. Just to reread that poem. Because this actually speaks to a lot of it, how grief we tend to keep at a little bit of arm's length, not really wanting to feel it, not really wanting to acknowledge it. And yet that acknowledgement, that churning toward, that welcoming in is an essential part of us as human beings, to learn how to be fully mature in this. Talking to Grief by Denise Levertov. Ah, grief, I should not treat you like a homeless dog who comes to the back door for a crust, for a meatless bone. I should trust you. I should coax you into the house and give you your own corner, a worn mat to lie on, your own water dish. You think I don't know you've been living under my porch. You long for your real place to be readied before winter comes. You need your name, your collar and tag. You need the right to warn off intruders, to consider my house your own and me your person, and yourself my own dog. So much of working with grief is simply creating space for it. Not to buy into this urgency of our life that we have to keep going on and doing more and more, but to create space. That's why often on retreats, like when I teach retreats, people who have grief they haven't fully felt, they're surprised by how strongly it can come up because they've finally given themselves space to feel it, to really acknowledge it, to open to it. Another way to say it is we've stripped away all their distractions, all their things that they do to not feel it. We're just asking us to be present with ourselves. Now, with grief, it sometimes it focuses on a particular person that we just lost, but also it can touch upon all the other griefs that we've had, especially the ones which haven't been fully integrated and felt. I think of grief work as really integration of this, these deep emotions, these deep pain, these deep losses, but at the same time, learning to open toward it, to have a sense of peace, spaciousness around it, to the point when the grief transforms into just appreciation for the time we had with that person, appreciation for the connection. And because we sometimes have a backlog that we haven't felt, it becomes almost overwhelming. We start to have another loss. And I sometimes talk to people who, you know, have a series of losses. They lost this person, and then a few months later, another person, and then another person. And it just becomes overwhelming. So many griefs, so many losses. So that's one of the important reasons for us to tend toward our grief well, so we can help things be more cleaned out, so we're more available for life. Because if we don't, we tend to find ourselves having to open to a greater and greater backlog of unfelt grief. If that's the case, you just feel as much as you can. Feel one part at a time and just trust that starts to open it up. It's a lot of patience with this. I think another reason that we sometimes have trouble turning and opening to our grief is that when we lose someone, it reminds us of our own mortality. We realize that, oh, where they went, I will go too. The gravestone. Like, remember, you know, even something like the epitaph, that even however, you know, youthful you are, how much energy you are, just remember that you will follow in my footsteps. So as we practice with grief, sometimes noticing which is leading. Is it really the sorrow, the pain around this loss? Or is it my fear of my own loss? Or fear of those around us who we will lose? I remember when I was, there was some age, maybe 11 or 10, I just started thinking about death and just really grieving the anticipated loss of people that were important to me, just feeling the sadness around it. Perhaps there was a time, I think maybe that was connected with one of my own grandparents passing away. Now, turning your heart toward grief, turning your practice toward it, doesn't have to be torturous, doesn't have to be overwhelming. I think that's part of the art of learning to work with grief, is to make it manageable. How much can I open to without being washed away, without being swept away by the power of it? At the same time, we also have to bring attention to it. We have to be willing to let that be kind of almost like a soil that we're allowing to become more and more tilled. There's more and more access to it. It's a little bit like a pressure cooker. You know, if we take the pressure off, it's going to steam and vent. We don't have to take the whole lid off all at once. Now, Rodney Smith, the founding teacher of Seattle Insight, my main teacher, has said that grief is really memory work. The grief is memory work. And this is an interesting thing to bring into our practice, because we spend so much of our time saying, okay, release that thinking mind, release the abstraction, release the fantasy, the worry, connect with this present moment. Okay, so does that mean that grief is not Dharma work? I think it's important to realize that it's almost like a sequential thing, that first we learn how to release our obsession, our enmeshment with the thinking world, our thinking minds, so we can actually learn to connect with something other than our thoughts, to connect with this present moment through our bodies, through our senses that are alive. So we start to realize, here's my abstraction on the moment, and here's the actual moment. Once I start to be able to discern that difference, then it's actually very helpful, if not vital, for us to start to bring in the mind again, to notice how the mind creates these stories, these illusions that we believe in, you know, including around grief and loss, to bring interest to that. The trick is to learn how to go back and forth between engaging in the story, the ideas, the memories, like working with grief, and also at the same time connecting with this present moment, the felt sense in the body, right? So with grief, it's really an obvious practice in some ways, because you reflect on someone that you've lost, and it elicits emotion. It elicits emotion. Emotions arise. Feel how those are in the body. The story is there, of course, that the fact that this person will no longer be with you, that there may be whatever was unfinished in their lives, things that were unsaid, all that stuff arises. But there's also the body's experience of that. Learning to re-ground into the body's experience. That starts to make this, allows us to integrate it much more deeply. So when I first started to learn how to work with grief, it was actually the grief around a relationship ending, not a death, but an end of a relationship. So you could say the death of a committed relationship. Being a young man, like 26, 25 or so, it was very shocking. It was very difficult. Not saying that no matter what age you are, that might not be difficult. I had a teacher who told me, he was helping me work with it, and he said, imagine, you know, try to gaze, he said just very simply, gaze into the immensity of the grief. You know, gaze into the vastness of that. And so I took that, I would go out into nature, I try to find a great expanse, like looking out at the sound or looking at a big horizon. And imagine my grief is just filling that whole landscape. Now we're just looking at that. You think that would make it too big, but actually making it larger helped it be not so contracted, not so stuck. It also helped me tap into this quality of emptiness, even though I was open to this very personal pain. This loss in my life, loss of relationship, again, that the process of grieving, I think, is very similar, whether it's a death of someone or a loss, a death of a relationship. It coincided with my introduction into Dharma practice. So, you know, I was around 26 years old, so that's, you know, close to 30 years now. But one of the pieces of Dharma that really kind of hooked me was this simple formula that your suffering is actually a function of your resistance toward experience. So the teacher said, resistance times experience equals suffering. So going through all this emotional suffering, I realized, well, maybe some of this pain I'm feeling is actually based on my resistance to it. And that became this beautiful theme that I would explore and open to for years, even to this day. And so with grief, it's like noticing where that resistance is. Where, how am I resisting? There is, it needs to be a quality of discernment at the same time. If it feels like the grief is just, I just can't stop thinking about it. It just seems so overwhelming. Then turning toward it, you don't have trouble turning toward it. It's kind of, it's trouble of finding a balance. We'll touch upon that in a little bit later here. And so with that theme, working with this grief, kind of melding in my Dharma practice and melding in other ways I was practicing with therapy and things like that, was it's almost felt like I had this huge reservoir of grief, of emotions and memories that just kept kind of filling up. Like a rainy season here in Seattle, the reservoir is overflowing. But intentionally working with the grief was like opening up the dam, letting the reservoir start to drain in a conscious way until it felt like, okay, it's kind of drained out. There's kind of a shift that I felt. Like the grief, instead of being so intense, it kind of dropped into something different. Or an shift from emotion of sadness to maybe of anger or joy, of fear, whatever it might be. And then I knew that grief for that little bit of time anyway, that reservoir had drained. And a few days later, a few weeks later, it would start to fill back up and I would return to it. So that's when Rodney talks about grief as memory work, is trying to bring the memories in intentionally. Looking at photo albums, looking at videos of yourself with this person or of that person. You know, trying to reflect, bring them forth a little bit. And then as you do that, then notice what it elicits. You let yourself open to it. So this does take space. You know, it's This kind of work, I find, especially when the grief is really strong and raw, it's a little hard to do casually, let's say, or on the side. It's hard to be like doing my job and at the same time feeling all the grief. Like I need to have a little bit of space to just give myself permission to really feel it. At the same time, there can be kind of just this background noticing it, noticing how it arises and how it passes. One technique that I found really helpful at that time for me was actually creating a mixed tape. I guess it was a mixed CD at that point. And I picked different songs that triggered or represented different aspects of that grieving process, of the sadness, of the fear, of the anger, of the denial, and of the peace, the acceptance. And as I did that, I would just listen to that, and I would be driving around sobbing and angry and just let myself really get behind the words of those songsters, express something that I was able to tap into to remind me of it. Now, Kubler-Ross, a very famous person around grief and dying, there's five stages that she articulated. There's denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. Now, these five, you know, are really essential to notice in our own process of grief. Because when grief gets a little stuck, sometimes you can find that one of these you're kind of not fully feeling. Like the anger, for example. I mean, a lot of us don't want to feel angry towards someone who died. Like we don't want to feel that resentment or that, why did they leave me? Or why did they not get things resolved? Why didn't they take care of themselves? Whatever it might be. But until we allow ourselves to feel that, either through journaling or through songs or however your heart is drawn to it, that grief is going to stay a little stuck. It's going to stay a little hardened. So these five elements, there's just a natural way that our hearts tend to process loss. Denial, anger, bargaining. Okay, let's see if I can make this go away. Depression, and then finally acceptance. So letting each one of those be felt, giving space for them, letting them be, give them a voice. Then after a certain point, the grief starts to change from being such a, that reservoir has drained enough, that you start to also really appreciate the times you were with that person. You start to appreciate that you had your life's paths crossed for a while, the joy of that, the memories of that. So that ratio of pain and loss starts to rebalance. The heart starts to unclench. It starts to soften. It starts to open. We start to have access to the wisdom that this is part of life, that things come and go. Each person I get close to, at some point, that relationship will no longer be there. It might be because we go different ways. It could be because they die. It could be because I die. But that's guaranteed. Ajahn Chah read this, he was talking to someone who was having a lot of trouble with grief, and these words are kind of strong, but he said basically, why do you grieve for this person? You should grieve when they're born. You should grieve when they first come into this world, because as soon as they're born, that means they eventually will die. So that's that bringing that quality of wisdom. But I think, as I started this talk, it's important not to jump over the humanness of being of a grieving person, the humanness of loss, and try to jump over to that into these concepts of equanimity and emptiness. Let that start to reveal itself through your grief, through the humanness. Now, those of us who have lost people, we know that often there's times of years when that grief, time of year when those griefs become more prevalent, more accessible. So holidays, birthdays, anniversaries, like especially the first ones of those. There's the first Thanksgiving without that person, the first holiday, the first birthday. And those can often be very challenging times. But if we work with our grief, we actually start to use those times as a way to kind of check ourselves. How am I with the grief? And maybe even using that to remember this person, to honor this person. Like going from the Hispanic tradition, like in Mexico, of the Day of the Dead, it seemed like such a wise tradition that each year around the 1st of November to create a really an intentional memory of that person, the people who have you've lost, pictures and maybe things which have represented their what they cared about in their life, not as a way to overwhelming ourselves, but actually just to connect with their life, to cherish their life, to take that grief and start to translate it into love, to appreciation. So working with grief intentionally, looking at photos, talking with people is such a powerful way to work with grief. Those who have shared that loss, people who don't know that person, but we all know what it is to lose people. Now, grief that feels like it's going to wash us away, that we're not a problem of turning away and denying it, is a problem that it just takes over our system. We just can't focus on anything else. So this is kind of the wise deflection or wise distraction of our practice, is learning to almost bracket the grieving times so they're not uncontained. So, okay, this period of time I'm going to really grieve. I'm going to take enough space and I'm going to just sob and cry and rant and all that stuff. But then after that period, I'm going to give myself an intentional break. Focus on something different. Connect, do something completely fun. Watch a funny movie, whatever it might be. Because otherwise it just becomes overwhelming. The tools of our practice, you know, feeling the body sitting, feeling their breath, feeling the feet touching the ground. Create a sense of expanding the container that's holding the grief, like that technique I discovered of looking out at nature and imagining the grief is just spreading out, or walking through the woods and just letting the grief paint the trees, paint the sky, paint the earth. Because the trees can hold as much grief as you can throw at it without flinching. In some way, that way nature teaches you this capacity to hold, to be with, without being shattered, without being overwhelmed. Doing things physical, taking care of yourselves. On those anniversaries, taking care of yourself. What do I need to do to give myself more space? So grief is something that we all have dealt with and will continue to deal with. Bring it into your practice. Bring it into a way to open to this experience of being human. One teacher said, the most important thing as a human being is to learn to transcend that humanness. The other equally important thing is to learn to be fully human. So learning to be fully human in our grief. Learning to use that discernment that we grow as practitioners, to feel it as a body experience, to notice, use the story, use the memories as a way to let things flow to the point that you transcend the grief into love, into appreciation. All right, we can sit quietly for a couple moments as we transition.
Hi there. Can everyone hear me all right? Inside here, yeah, great, and online too, I see some thumbs up. Well, congratulations, you've come to hang out here and talk about grief and death for an evening, right? Way to spend a long weekend. Yeah, no, but I actually mean it, you know. This is a topic that we don't give enough space to, I think, right? You know, we live in a society, among many societies, not just ours, where this is something we push behind closed doors, we don't talk about. Death occurs in hospitals, in homes, in quiet places. It doesn't happen out in the open. We don't speak about it very often. And we're not unique in that, but it has an effect, and there are other ways of living. Here it's rare to see someone passing away. How often do you encounter a body that has recently passed, or if experience a person at the moment of passing, right? It's a very rare thing. So there are other ways of being. In Buddhism, we, there are alternate ways of thinking about death and about embracing death in our lives. There's a story about the Buddha. It goes the way these stories about the Buddha go, right? The Buddha will ask a question. He asks the question of the people surrounding him. How often should we be thinking about death? How often should we bring death into our practice? And of course, someone replies, "Sir, we should be thinking about death every week." And of course, the way the story goes, he says, no, that's not nearly enough. And then someone else comes up and says, "Oh, we should think about it many times a week." No, not enough. And then someone else says, "Sir, we should be thinking about death every day." He says, "No, still not nearly enough. We should be thinking about death with every breath." And of course these stories go this way, but there's something really being pointed to here. Every breath, right? And if you think about it, my goodness, what other things do we live with this much certainty that we are going to die? That everyone we know will die, right? There's very little else we are as certain of. And yet, it's so rare that this comes into our thoughts. It's so rare that we sit and think about mortality, about the mortality of those we love, about ourselves, right? It's just not something we live with and breathe with. So that's what's being pointed to in that story. Contemplate it with every breath. Well, maybe not every breath, but, he's pointing to this idea that this is really a part of who we are. If you think about it, yeah, it really makes a lot of sense. So there are five remembrances. This is from the Upajatana Sutta, that have to do with aging and death. They are: I am of the nature to grow old. I cannot escape old age. I am of the nature to grow ill. I cannot escape sickness. I am of the nature to die. I cannot escape death. I will be separated from everything and everyone I hold dear. My only true possession is my own actions. Right? So this isn't just Buddhism. Today I was listening to a story. This is Don Juan, the Yaqui medicine man that Carlos Castañeda invokes. He advises that we should feel death's presence over our left shoulder, specifically the left shoulder. And he refers to death as this thing, this ever-present force in our lives, always over our left shoulder. When asked to contemplate any question, when asked to come up with answers, he advises you consult with death. See what death has to say. We'll talk a little more about that in a moment. So, but first, we're talking about working with death. Tim was talking about grief, this specific moment, this specific experience we have when death is close, right, and how we feel in the immediate aftermath. I'm speaking a little more generally about working with death, whether it's right now, whether it's in the future, whether it's a death has just happened to us. So why do we do this? Why would we do this? Why would we keep death so near? One reason is to embrace reality, right? We have the choice in every moment to protect ourselves from the truth or to embrace the truth. To embrace how things really are. The Buddha advised that we go for embracing the truth. to meet it with clarity, with wisdom, with courage. Why? When we face this reality directly, that leads to liberation, that leads to freedom. And as a personal experience, there's no practice I can think of that I've worked with that has given me more joy, more a feeling of relief, of relaxation, of freedom, than practicing with death. It's a paradox, isn't it? You know? Part of it is that when we work with this truth, everything else is a little smaller, you know? This is the big one. This is one of the big ones out here. And when we don't face things directly, we're cutting ourselves off from opening completely, right? If we think about death in this way, this is one of the most obvious truths of our existence. And if we're not facing this one that's both huge and also very clear, how can we completely recognize what's going on in our lives? How can we completely open without this one, right? This is a big one. When we face this truth, we also overcome our fear of it gradually. You know, it's hard. You know, every time I hear, it's the fourth of those remembrances that I mentioned. It's the one that says, I will be separated from everything and everyone I hold dear. Right? This fills me. The first thing I feel is I feel a dread and I feel a loneliness. These are the first things that come up. This is why maybe we don't think about this as much as we might. But then, and you know, it's also when I feel that dread, one of the things I recognize is, oh my goodness, I think I've been working with this thing. I think I've had practice with death. And it still feels fresh. You know, I can still feel a horror in that feeling of being separated from everything and everyone. And what does that point to? That points to, I'm not done with this. You know, however much we work with this, there's still fodder there. There's still some fruit. There's still rocks to be overturned that we haven't done with. And that tells me that there's probably some avoidance that's still in this practice, right? No matter how much I think I've done otherwise. So yeah, so it's this turning to reality. It's this awakening completely. This is a big step there, right? This is something we all have to face. And, you know, some of us, I want to point out, when we think about working with death, it's easier for us to think about our own death. Somehow, for some of us, when we think of our own deaths, it's okay. And it's really when we turn to others that we really feel the pain of it. When we imagine others that we hold dear, or we imagine it happening to someone else, we can kind of more easily work with the other person. But that phrase, right, I will be separated from everything and everyone I love, it's got it all in there, right? We could be the ones who go first. They could be the ones who go first. But either way, this is death we're working with. It doesn't matter whether it's our death or someone else's. It's this separation that is true. It will happen, right, in some way or the other. So sometimes it's easier to work with ourselves, sometimes with others, but we should really think here, we're working with the same thing. It's the same element. It's this loss. It's this irrecoverable loss, and it's this truth of impermanence. So another thing here, why another reason to work with this. This reminds us, this practice of death. And here's the fun part, really, right? This is why it can feel so good to work with death, honestly. It reminds us to live fully and live with wisdom in a way that for me, nothing else can. Like nothing else can crack through and make me realize. I remember I was in an airport. I was on a layover on a long flight. You know, you get into these weird loopy states on layovers. You know, you're kind of half asleep. You don't know whether you're tired or awake. You don't know what time of day it is. And somehow I decided to do this meditation with death at that time, and it just hit me the right way. And it was a meditation that was asking me to reflect on the deaths of loved ones. And I pictured those who are dearest to me in my life. And something in me just released in this loopy, layover state that I was in. And I just felt this release. And I think I called my mom right after this. And I just told her how much I loved her. And it was one of these moments where I don't think I'd done that, maybe ever, but certainly not in a decade or two, right? It felt so good. It felt so good to do. And I just felt so light afterwards. Let's think also when we're thinking of living fully, that fifth remembrance, my only true possession is my actions, right? When we think about the wisdom of death, when we're working with death, when we realize everything will be taken from us, all we have are the choices we make, the ways we show up in this life, the ways we connect with others, the way we respond to what we're given, those actions, those choices we make, that's all, right? That's all we're given. That's all we take with us. That's all we're remembered for. Well, then, what can you do but live fully? What can you do but live with wisdom? Right? How do we act when we recognize that our only possession is our actions? How would we act? Do we focus on accumulating possessions that will be taken from us? Or do we act to foster love? Do we tell our loved ones that we love them? Right? What's in the way of those things? Why don't we do this more often? I ask myself the same question. Sometimes just recognizing, practicing with death, it really makes that alive. I want to do a short exercise. If you close your eyes for a moment, if we all just close our eyes. Now imagine you're given exactly 1 year now to live. Imagine that this day is the beginning of that year, and exactly 1 year from now, that will be the end. What would you focus on? What would you do in this year? Think of the things that occupy your mind right now, today, this week. Your worries, your concerns, the things you're looking forward to. Which of those would you keep? Which of those would you put energy into? What might you do instead? Thank you. Yeah, you can open your eyes now. James Barras spoke about a year of living as if it's your last year. He did this exercise for a whole year, and I think he led a group that was doing this. Sounds like a really fascinating way to spend a year, huh? So, we've talked about reasons why we might focus on death, right? The ways in which it can open us, the ways in which it can crack us open and really focus on the things that are important. So how do we do this? How can we embrace death more closely? How do we work with it? So there are a few things, there are probably many more. I'm going to point to three things. One thing, and this is a broad inclination, a thing we can bring into our practice, is we can contemplate death and turn towards the fear, Right? Sometimes it's fear that's in the way. It's the vastness, the overwhelmingness of this. And when we feel that, we can just let ourselves feel that. We can work with it in small bits as it comes up. In our daily life, right? There's working with grief when it's fresh, when it's overwhelming. But what about when there's not grief? What about today and tomorrow if these aren't times that you're working with grief? If we contemplate death more regularly in our practice, and we feel what comes up, and we sit with that feeling, you know, we can slowly become accustomed to that. We can understand that fear. Sometimes it leads to some insight, too. I was just sitting with it today, and I had some insight just from sitting with the feeling of working with this. We can also familiarize ourselves with the facts of death. You know, the five remembrances that I mentioned are actually meant as five daily remembrances. That's how they're described. I'll read them once again. I am of the nature to grow old. I cannot escape old age. I am of the nature to grow ill. I cannot escape sickness. I am of the nature to die. I cannot escape death. I will be separated from everything and everyone I hold dear. My only true possession is my actions. Right? Daily remembrances. Once we work with those, right, you can imagine, you're just familiarizing yourself. Instead of death being this thing that, you know, suddenly shocks us and it's fresh all the time, imagine working with that. Imagine as the Buddha exhorted, you know, with every breath, remembering mortality, remembering death. You know, doing it when it's not so quick to the pain, when it's not right in front of us, but every day. There is a Soto Zen teacher, Kun Franz, who says, remember every day. He's speaking about these five daily remembrances. He says, remember them every day. Let them be the air you breathe. Metabolize them. And then whatever you choose to do with your life, the actions you choose will come from that place of total honesty. Of total transparency, right? How can we live otherwise if we're in that? The last thing I want to mention is practicing with impermanence in daily life and in our practice, in our meditation practice. Anytime we practice just with the breath, just with the emotions that come up, just with the thoughts that come up, and we recognize that those things come and they go. They're impermanent. These ways that we think we are, they're impermanent, right? Near the end of his life, Ram Dass said, you know, he had experienced a stroke and he lived with a stroke for something like 20 or 25 years. And he said, I used to think to myself, oh, I'm a golfer. I'm a this, I'm a that. This is all that's been taken away from me. And when you feel the impermanence in small ways, you start to realize you can kind of tap into the vaster ways in which all these things we create, all these things we identify with, are sort of impermanent. And then you imagine, you know, gee, every morning I wake up, I'm a little bit different, you know. An invitation is to compare the way in which we're always changing, the way in which we can kind of see these identities as illusory, as not really permanent, not real. We can compare that with death. You know? Whatever you believe about death, you know, there are some physical truths about death. Our bodies, they decompose. And new things come from these materials and this energy that we once occupied, that we once called us. Right? There's some analogy here, right? In the way in which our moment-to-moment experience is always new, is always fresh. And what happens to us after we die? It's just a contemplation. I won't say more about that. I'll leave with one quote. A famous Hindu guru, Ramana Maharshi, who spoke in the Advaita Vedanta lineage, Who taught him that? As he was dying, his followers went to him and they said, "Don't leave him. Don't leave us. Please, Maharshi, you know, use this great wisdom you've cultivated. Keep yourself alive. Don't leave." And he looked at them and he said, he laughed and he said, "Where could I go? Thank you."
All right, thank you, Arv, for that lovely talk. And so now I'd like to invite you to have a chance to speak with each other. And the format of this, we've talked about grief, we've talked about death. So if that's, you know, gauge for yourself, you know, if it feels like this is really a lot to hold and open to, or maybe the grief is really intense, it's fine to sit this out or just to be kind of quiet, be more of a witness in the group. And you can talk about how that landed for you, talking about grief, about death. You can also spring into the group, you know, sharing those who you're missing, those who you've lost. You know, again, you can monitor how much feels appropriate for you, the ones that you've cared about. And we'll do this for about 20 minutes, so we'll have groups of 4 to 5 people, so just kind of monitor that time. And in these groups, it's not about trying to help someone, you know, help someone or offer suggestions. It's just offering your presence, offering that compassionate listening, and then yourself speaking from your heart to speak your own experience. Right? Is that enough to go on? All right. So those in the room, invite you to find 4 or 5 other people, and online, we'll put you into some groups in a moment. All right, welcome back. So we have a few minutes if there's any sharing or questions you would like to do. And here in the room, we have a mic so you can hear online, and online you can just raise your virtual hand. And if you have a question for either Arv or myself, you could specify, or we could both tackle it depending on how it lands.
Hi, I'm Armin. As we were talking in my group, I realized that something that I have been thinking about that I would like to get your opinion on is the feeling of guilt associated with not kind of thinking about grief, mm-hmm. Or about the person, like a person that's passed away or mm-hmm. is no longer in your life, that you kind of catch yourself not. Maybe there'll be weeks, months where it doesn't even cross your mind so much. Mm-hmm. And really kind of a big part of you wants to feel that because you feel like that's the only kind of remaining thing that you mm-hmm. have is that grief with that person. Because that love is intermixed with that grief. And if that's gone, then you don't have that love anymore. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering if you could kind of speak about that aspect and how
sure.
Yeah, how to deal with it. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you for that question. Yeah, so the guilt, like I should be, you know, feeling more, I should be, you know, more heartbroken or that kind of quality, and you just kind of feel like you're done with it, you're not thinking about it. I mean, part of it is that's the nature. I mean, in some ways you could say that's grief that's been well felt, or maybe there's just a cleanness of that relationship, or is it a way like, okay, there's a naturalness to it. So part of it is, you know, just, okay, that just not forcing ourselves to be something other than we are. What I would, you know, encourage us, if you feel that, is just to double check, am I really, because there's kind of a near, sometimes we talk about the near enemy, it's like, it feels like, okay, I'm done with it, but maybe I'm just kind of like pushed it down a little bit. So, you know, spend a little time intentionally, you know, looking at some photo albums, doing some things to really kind of trigger that relationship, and just notice what arises. Or maybe just do a little journaling, you know, write, okay, let me just write about this person for the next 10 minutes and see what comes up. And it may be like, yeah, yeah. And then you might say, oh, there is something I'm not feeling. That's what you're looking for, is there something that I'm not feeling? But if you've really felt it, I mean, there's people I've lost in my life, yeah, I don't think about them for a long time until something reminds me of them. And then noticing what arises in relationship to that. Is there a sense of, oh, there's a little bit of sadness, but there's also an appreciation of the times we have spent together. So part of it is the nature that water has already gone under the bridge, right? We've moved on. And so there's nothing wrong with that. In some ways, that's healthy, as long as we haven't, like, denied or repressed some of the grief. You're welcome. You want anything?
Yeah, just to add briefly, there are many ways we can process someone's death. And grief has a specific connotation. There's a specific feeling that we associate with it. And it can become an expectation. And you mentioned first the feeling of guilt for not processing it in that specific way. I wanted to invite that there are other ways to honor the memory. There are other ways, there are modes you can feel that don't feel like maybe what you expect out of grief. And to invite that as a possibility as well.
Okay, go ahead, Tish. Or Trish.
Okay. Well, I'm wondering, how would you apply this to, not someone who's died, but someone who you've, it's like a death, there's a falling out, and you've parted ways, and it's kind of like an irreconcilable difference, and they're no longer in your life. And it feels like a death, but it's not. And I'm wondering how you might apply those concepts to those kind of situations.
Yeah, sure, that's an important aspect to it. You know, we have another time in this year, or the year we do, September, we do a forgiveness ceremony. So part of it is that kind of gets mixed in too with this. Is there some level of, something that's unresolved? What I like to work with around that is kind of doing that really an honest inventory of my whole heart and mind around it. Because sometimes there's a sense of not holding responsibility for my own actions, or maybe there's things I haven't said to them. Of course, there's a lot of pain in the fact that relationship has dissolved, that you no longer are in contact, whether it's your choice or their choice, so many different permeations of that. But to be willing to really kind of put it all out on the table for yourself, at least, to see, okay, what's really not felt here? That's what you look for, is kind of what's sticky in it. Now, sometimes I think of it like if we took a silk sheet and we're pulling it across a surface, if there was like a rock in there, that sheet would be kind of snagged on it. And what I'm looking for is a smoothness of that, that I can just kind of touch the emotions, the thoughts, the memories, and there's kind of a movement, that smoothness. But when there's a little snag, then I go, okay, I'm going to investigate that, turn toward it, you know, opening to the kind of the shadow emotions of resentment and anger, and making sure those are fully acknowledged, fully felt. And sometimes having maybe playing with a sense of dialogue with that person. And this is actually good for grief too, is especially the emotions that we sometimes have trouble feeling around anger, resentment, is imagine you writing a letter to that person and you say, okay, this is what I want to say to you. This is what I want to be heard. And then reverse it, have them write a letter back to you. And sometimes that's a way to really help that flush out and open to it. And you can do the same process of having, looking at photos, looking at memories, bringing forth the emotions around it, bringing forth sangha, talking to people around it. And just kind of, let's see, when is my heart free of it? When is my heart open and easy with that, you know, the loss of that relationship? All right. Thank you, Trish. Does that help?
Yeah, it helps. You know, like, I feel like I've forgiven myself with my part. Like, what was my part in all this? I've looked what I thought their part in all this. I've forgiven them. You know, it's like we just did what we did, and it wasn't very skillful in the time. And I don't want to have the open the relationship back up again, but
Mm-hmm.
there's still like a lot of grief there. And
Yeah.
I can try to look for stickiness, but I'm just not sure where to go from there.
Yeah, it's almost like you create space to feel that grief. You know, just say intentionally say, okay, I'm going to take this hour or 2 hours, and I'm going to just intentionally open to this grief around this end of this relationship. Even though you're clear you don't want to resume it, you're clear that you've kind of forgiven yourself and forgiven them, to let that grief kind of breathe and open and flow through you. And for myself, often, you know, any strong emotion, I want to work with it, open to it to the point that it's something shifts. There's either a shift of a deeper emotion, or there's a shift of understanding around it. Something I didn't realize. Because there's basically some aspect of that that's not being fully seen or acknowledged. And that piece kind of holds it kind of in a stasis, keeps it kind of stuck. And until you are able to open to it, then it's going to continue to be stuck. And the nice thing is you can just say, okay, I'm going to open to this experience. And you can let your own heart and mind reveal it at its own time. So it might be, you know, it might be several weeks or months of intentionally working with it a few times a week. Let me just open to this. Let me recollect and let myself feel, let me self-emote. And then see what arises around that. That's surprising. That's different than you expected.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, Mark, let's go ahead.
I had one thought that I wanted to add. When it comes to relationships versus something like death and that kind of grief, there's one distinguishing factor that can sometimes be a snag, and it's that death has a finality, and there isn't going back and solving death. And so sometimes, you know, my advice is if you sit with what comes up and you find the same emotions coming up or the same issues coming up over and over as you sit with the challenge of the loss of a relationship, to invite in those emotions, you know, to turn towards them and look at them, but without this energy of solving. Without trying to fix or solve them, just let them be and let them take their time. Yeah, just a thought. Thanks.
All right, maybe one more if there's anyone in the room or online. All right, come on up, Adam.
I thought I'd like to do a quick share. I've been given the opportunity to work a lot with grief and fear and death in this year. And I really appreciated, Arv, that you brought up the five remembrances. I've been working a lot with that. And I have found that it's so powerful to orient towards kind of not just the brevity of the life that we have, but also the opportunity, you know, that comes when you're practicing with I'm not going to be here forever, and the people I love aren't going to be here forever, and how I guess how and how powerful it feels to be able to say, you know, yeah, I have some responsibility for the way that I act, you know, in relation to that, or I have an opportunity to take responsibility for those actions. And I was sharing with my group that I was talking with that I was at the Great Wolf Lodge with my kids, and I was in this throng of people, and I was having a lot of anxiety, you know, unrelated to the Great Wolf Lodge, just because that's what I was carrying with me that day. And so I was practicing with the five recollections, and I had this moment of like seeing like all these people there, some of them were grimacing, you know, trying to hurry up so that they could have fun, and some that were just laughing and having an amazing time. And like I had this moment of connecting with like, wow, like I'm here right now, and these people are here right now, but we are all going to the same train station at the end. You know, we're all on the same path. And I just felt this amazing connection with everybody there, the people that were having a hard time, the people that were having a great time. And, you know, just that practice, like, it doesn't seem like it would be such an enriching and powerful practice to think like, oh yeah, I'm going to die. And I have responsibility for how I handle that. And everything that I love is going to change and be taken away. But it is really an empowering thing. And it's been a great thing to work with.
Thank you. Thanks, Adam. Yeah, that's a great addition to reasons to do this. Death is something that connects us all, isn't it? This is something we all face together. And it can really break down walls to contemplate and recognize that. Thank you. Yeah.
The water slide of life all ends in the same pool. All right. With that, thank you all for your engagement. Thank you, R, for sharing this evening. And, you know, this is it's a big topic. You know, it's something we all work with, and just knowing your own, you know, be kind to yourself. Don't feel like you have to force yourself into this. But when your heart's drawn to it, then, you know, that's the time. So next week, we are leaving wisdom, and we won't leave wisdom, but we'll integrating wisdom into the next parami, which is energy. So I'll be here teaching, and then that first Monday, and then we'll have Carrie Peterson the last 3 weeks of June. And we mostly, almost positively, will be downstairs in our new space. So we'll have people directing you down. So if you feel like coming, you can be in the first session down there. And it will be, it's very beautiful down there. All right, thank you all for your engagement, and hope to see you soon, and be well. Thank you.